Welcome to the Full of Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording. It's 2:44 p.m. that is Central Time. Today is January 19th. And I guess a line comes to mind is, once more unto the breach, dear friends. That we've stopped up the breach with our failed breakouts on a number of occasions already. So gold is pushing back up towards the 1850 level. And every time in the last 8 or 9 months it has traversed that level, it's failed. And it's been a profitable shorting opportunity for anyone who was disposed in that direction. But I think as we look at the weekly chart, it's quite clear there's a sequence of higher reaction lows that's been in place now since February of last year. So almost a year of incrementally rising levels where there might have been opportunities to short the rallies, but there have been plenty of opportunities to buy the dips. And we're seeing prices advancing again. Well, this might be the occasion on which gold can push through to new highs. But if it can establish itself above 1850, I think it is going to be a very short dash straight through to new all-time highs. Because the one thing we know about gold is that when it goes, it can really go. And that is generally when most of the gains within secular bull markets occur. That it can go for lengthy periods of time where it does very little but range. And then subsequently, that when it has ranged for sufficiently long to disillusion all but the most ardent bulls, then it explodes on the upside. So I think we're at that point of disillusionment, particularly when I look at some of the emails I've received with people expressing frustration at the money they've lost and the time they've lost with just sitting through this long consolidation. But it's also worth reminding ourselves that in the last big bull market, there were at least three, if not four, occasions when gold went sideways for 18 months at a time. So the peak was back in August of 2020. And we're coming up on almost 18 months before the next breakout. So even if prices pop through to the 1800 level, 1850 level, I should say, well then perhaps we get a push up towards 2000 and it breaks out after 18 months, which would be a happy coincidence. And obviously there's nothing set in stone, but lengthy consolidations are certainly not out of the ordinary when it comes to gold. And I think it's also worth highlighting that silver prices have got really well-defined first step above the base characteristics. And the price is rebounding from the lower side of that range and is up 73 cents today, which improved upon the performance from yesterday. And platinum has also got first step above the base characteristics and pushed through and back above the psychological $1,000 level today, although I would highlight that the first step above the base here is not as well defined as it is for silver. But even palladium, which has really pulled back extremely sharply over the last few months, was in positive territory today and pushing back above the $2,000 level. Then I think it's also relevant that the gold shares, which would be the larger gold companies in GDX, have got well-defined first step above the base characteristics, and the ETF is firming again from the $30 level. Interestingly, it is Barrick Gold which has got the closest chart pattern to the ETF, and it was up in a dynamic manner today on the back of its strong performance in terms of production. And then we can think about some of the better performers. So Newmont Mining is right in the region of its peak from back in 2011. And it's firming from the lower side of its range in a pretty dynamic manner in here over the course of the last 3 weeks. So that's, I think, rather encouraging. When we think about Franco-Nevada, which is the most successful of all the streaming companies, then it's got a reasonably similar pattern as well. It's firming from the region of the peaks. And obviously, we've had a really different price environment for Franco-Nevada. So it's firming from the region of the peak from 2020 rather than 2011. And Wheaton Precious Metals, which of course used to be silver Wheaton, but they basically had to become gold miners during the big bear market, is also firming from the highs from back in 2012. And it was able to push on to new highs, new all-time highs, during the big move in 2020. So this again looks like a pretty orderly consolidation overall. So there's certainly evidence of some of the gold shares having performed more in line with the gold price, and others that performed more in line with the gold share index. But I think it's also worth highlighting the ratio of gold shares to the gold price. And I do use the NYSE Arca Gold Bugs Index because it's got a lot more history. So we had a really profound period of outperformance by gold shares, where they doubled in value relative to the gold price in the big run-up in 2016. Since then, they haven't really gone anywhere, and they lost room, or excuse me, they lost performance relative to gold for 3 years after the peak in 2016, and they've been losing their position relative to gold since the peak in 2020 as well. But there's the real potential here that if gold can push higher, then it's going to see gold shares do much better. Gold shares had really been castigated during the last big bull market for being capital destroyers. So they peaked relative to the price of gold way early. And they did spectacularly well off the lows from 2001 to about 2003. And then, as a group, really did not keep up with the price of gold because they spent every single penny available to them on expanding and buying one another. So cash flows went out the window, and they loaded up with debt. So that when oil, when the gold price peaked, then they were left with really significant debt loads. Well, they've since adopted a much more cash flow oriented business model. All-in sustaining prices are pretty much a factor of the entire industry right now. So investors can have some visibility on where they think there's going to be value in the gold market. And they know what the worst case scenario is for profitability. And yet they're still unwilling to accept that gold miners are making, in many cases, 50% or even 100% margins on their all-in sustaining costs at today's prices. And those kinds of margins are what you see in, they're the kinds of margins that software companies wish they had. And I think that it's inevitable that when gold starts to break out once more, then the gold shares are going to move back into a position of outperformance. Now, of course, right now everyone is talking about inflation, and bond yields, they were a little easier in here today. Now, they've been surging higher over the course of the last month, and the 10-year yield broke out to new highs over the course of the last week. And it's coming back into the region of the 2% level, which acted as some resistance back in late 2019. The market is beginning to price in the potential that there might even be more than four interest rate hikes this year. And I have a little graphic to illustrate that. So when let me see if I can find that graphic. But the reality is that does anybody really think there's going to be 4 interest rate hikes this year. If we get up to 4 interest rate hikes, the stock market is going to have conniptions, and we've already seen a significant drawdown in the most interest rate sensitive portions of the market. I think that there's a pretty solid argument that, and I also just saved this chart to save me from having to pull it up. It's US CPI year over year, and it goes back to 1914. So we have 100 years of data up on the screen. Now we can definitely look at the period in between the Second World War and the mid 1960s, and inflation was very much under control, and it didn't really go anywhere. And we had modest inflation. It went up a bit and down a bit after 1980, but most particularly in the 1990s. And now we're at a CPI on a year-over-year basis of 7%. But most importantly, even in the big inflationary trend of the 1970s, we had spikes 1 year or 2 years and down for a couple of years and up for a couple of years and down for a couple of years. And it was the trend of inflation that was most important because we had higher lows. So now we've had the breakout. And I suspect that we're not all that far away from the peak in inflationary pressures in the short term. But I think it's also likely that we're going to see higher reaction lows, so that CPI figure isn't going back down to 1% or 2%. It's probably going to bottom somewhere around 3%. If that's the case, then one interest rate hike, maybe two, by the Federal Reserve is going to be more than enough to begin to curtail inflationary pressures. And just one way of thinking about it is in terms of mortgages. If the mortgage rate was 2.75% back at the beginning of 2020, of 2021, and the average home price in the USA at least is about $390,000, well, that would have been a mortgage of, $1,592. And right now, we have interest rates around 3.75%. So then you get a significant pickup. Well, rates might be increasing, but if property prices go up, property taxes go up. If interest rates go up, then the ability of people to fund their mortgage is going to be dictated by how much money they have and how fast their wages are going up. But if your mortgage payment is rising, or is and of course you have fixed rate mortgages in the USA, so people have been able to lock in low rates during the pandemic. But anyone coming into the market this spring is going to be faced with higher prices and higher mortgage rates, and that's going to contribute to some price pressure. So when we look at the Shiller or the Case-Shiller year-over-year figures, well, they peaked in July at 20%. Now, 20% year-over-year is an awfully big jump in property prices, but it peaked in July. It's currently at 18.4%. It's going to be updated again next week, and that'll be for October. Well, this is for October. The next release will probably be more like for November, but we're starting to see that property prices are coming back down. And of course, Taiwan Semiconductor is going to be investing tens of billions in new production. Intel is also investing upwards of 28 billion in new production. So these are important factors because one of the most limiting factors in bringing down inflationary pressures has been the absence of a big boost in production of semiconductors. One of the big contributing factors to inflation has been used cars. Well, there's a lot of people sitting out there with three-year-old leases, and they'd love to be able to shift into a new vehicle, but they can't get them. So when semiconductor supply increases, and potentially that's going to be in the towards the end of the first half of this year, well, then more cars will be produced. And if they're producing more cars, then there'll be more inventory of cars coming off of leases. And that should help to bring down the price of second-hand vehicles, which would also be somewhat deflationary, or at least disinflationary. So we've had a panicky environment, and people thinking this time is different in terms of inflation. Well, they're not paying attention to the strength in commodity prices. That's probably where the biggest commodity or the biggest inflationary pressures are likely to manifest. Copper was up today by almost 7 cents. It continues to firm from above the trend mean, and this, I think, continues to look like a broad consolidation. And oil prices continue to march higher. Now, ultimately, this high price of oil is going to be deflationary instead of inflationary. It's inflationary in the short term, but the price is up to nearly $90, and it wasn't quite able to hold all the advance in here today. Well, what that suggests, at least to me, is that we're going to start to see some demand destruction coming through. There's the potential that growth could weaken in the first half of this year. And oil prices up at $90, they'll also start to encourage new supply. I thought there was an interesting article relating to the Alberta tar sands, and it's simply that the big international companies, or the oil majors, are exiting the sector, and local producers are picking up some of the available licenses. But ultimately, the supply from the tar sands is at record highs. So there's a lot of production going on. And of course, OPEC has been rather slow to respond to a recovering global economy, and for good reason. They're not certain. They don't want to have to spend the money on increasing supply if they don't think that prices would be sustained afterwards. But I suspect that we do have short-term oversold conditions in a significant number of fixed income instruments. And the 10-year future, having gone from 132 to really testing the 125 level earlier, or I guess, well, really 127 this morning to be more accurate. Well, it looks oversold, and it looks like we're due at least a bounce here. And if we're due a bounce, well, then this accelerated decline that we've seen in some of the most liquidity-dependent markets might start to ease a bit. So the ARK Innovation ETF was down again in here today. But when we look at this on a weekly chart, well, we can see, for example, that it peaked at 160, so it's below 80 now. It's down more than 50%. And it might unwind more of this advance. It could come all the way back down and test the peak from before the pandemic, which would be around the 60 level. But there's no question that it's accelerating lower, which means that people are selling this now, not so much because they want to, but because they feel like they have to. And that's generally when people start to become more interested from a value perspective. And of course, if bond yields were to moderate and start to come back down, well, then that would start to create some demand for the more speculative portions of the market. So we certainly can think about the Nasdaq, and it's right in the region now of the 200-day moving average. Now, the trend has experienced some inconsistency. It is dipping back down into the underlying range, and it's now testing the 200-day moving average. And this is, in fact, the first time it's actually got down to it since the initial failure in early 2020 and then back in 2019. If it's going to bounce, well, then it should really start to be bouncing before the end of this week. If we see it encountering resistance in the region of the 200-day moving average, well, then that's going to be rather troubling. So it's really all to play for here for the Nasdaq. But one thing I'm pretty sure of is that if the market pulls back by about 20%, which is exactly what happened in 2018, then the Federal Reserve is going to become a lot more accommodative in terms of how they talk about their process of tapering, raising rates, and balance sheet runoff. But they don't have any real reason to do anything at present because the S&P 500 isn't really all that far off its peak. So when we're only really 3 weeks, not even 3 weeks down from the peak, and we've only seen a reaction of 5.6%, which is really nothing. So what we would really need to see is a bigger decline in order to I think chasten the this view that interest rates could go up by 4 times in a year. I really think that that's impossible, and or at least not impossible, but certainly not possible without significant repercussions. And we're only just beginning to see that in terms of stock market performance. So I think these are some of the more important points. We have seen quite a bit of volatility in Japan. So the Nikkei was down in a violent manner in here today, but it's up in, or at least it was before I started recording. Sorry, I should put up the futures. It was up in the futures market very slightly, but the Hang Seng is showing relative strength. So this is certainly contributing to people looking for those markets that have already pulled back by a lot and thinking that perhaps there is value there. And the FTSE is among the better performers internationally this year, and it was in positive territory and pushing back above the 7,500 level in here this week. And then the Brazilian market is also beginning to steady. So that was also up and in a reasonably dynamic manner over the course of the last 2 weeks. One thing that I think is particularly relevant here is that the Asia Dollar Index is firming from the upper side of its range. And I think that's more relevant right now than the dollar index. Now, the dollar index was a little softer in here today, but Europe doesn't want a strong currency. And they seem to be a little bit more eager to have a weaker currency than the USA is right now. So that's going to limit just how much the dollar index can fall. And we certainly saw a little bit of demand for the yen over the course of the last couple of days, and that's generally indicative of some risk-off environment. And then I think it's also relevant to pay attention to the VIX index, because it hasn't really moved all that much yet. But it was in positive territory today, and it is pushing higher. And it generally moves above the 30 level are when we start to see some demand coming back into the stock market. So we're certainly still in a corrective phase. We're starting to see some extension of estimates, particularly in the bond market, because it was initially estimated that the Fed would struggle to have 2 interest rate hikes this year. Then it was 3, then it was 4, and now they're going for more than 4. So it seems to me that people are panicking about inflation. And it's not so much that inflationary pressures are going to die off entirely, but that in order for a trend to occur, you need a breakout. Then you need it to pull back and put in a higher reaction low, and then you need a breakout again. Well, we've just seen the breakout, and we've seen a meaningful pullback in terms of the assets that are most exposed to that. We're definitely, though, starting to see gold firm, and gold is firming because Investors are beginning to price in the potential that the Federal Reserve isn't going to be able to raise rates, and that they might have to even ease policy in order to support asset prices, despite the fact that inflationary pressures are quite likely to bottom at higher prices or higher levels. And generally, gold does better when central banks can't do what they need to in order to control inflation. And if that's the case, then the Asia dollar index doing better, if that breaks higher, well, then that's also going to be a green light for investment in the Asian markets. So I think there's certainly the potential here that we're in a commodity bull market with industrial resources continuing to do well and demand returning. But Brazil also should do well in a commodity-led bull market. And if when interest rates start to come down there, then that's also likely to reignite growth. So there is certainly the potential that commodity-led bull markets will favor both commodity producers as well as the higher growth Asian markets. And I think with that, I'll leave you for today and wish all the best to all of you.